Hey guys, welcome to the Grayscale Gorilla podcast. Today is January, I think it's 23rd, and I'm in the little recording booth here in the corner of the studio. And we got the chat room open and everybody's hanging out, and we're going to talk about, some random stuff today. So anyway, thanks for listening. And I wanted to give you a quick update. We have some new stuff over at the blog. If you're if you do 3D animation or have used our HDRI light kit or HDRI studio pack, we have some updates and stuff. So make sure to check out the blog. One of them is a free update and one of them is an add-on that goes on top of the HDRI studio pack that basically gives you a bunch more studios. So I've been using that a lot lately. So check that out. Also, I wanted to say, not that it's helpful. So I guess I'm just excited because there's no more tickets left, but I'm doing the Creative Mornings talk this Friday for Chicago. And if you're not familiar with Creative Mornings, it's a monthly series where you kind of show up on a Friday. I think it's Friday here in Chicago. I'm not sure around the world now, because these things happen around the world now. They got one in a bunch of different cities. You can go to search Creative Mornings. You can find all that. And my buddy that runs it, Mig, asked me to speak at it this Friday. So I'm really excited about that. I'm excited to talk about the theme. The theme is happiness, which is cool because that's kind of what I mostly talk about when I go talk at students and stuff like that about, you know, how to be happy and do the job that you want to do and make stuff that you have fun making. I have this, maybe it's a weird idea, or maybe it's a silly idea, but I really believe that the society is beneficial, the world is beneficial, and you, most importantly, you are beneficial, or more important and more beneficial to the world and for yourself if you do what makes you happy. In other words, if there's a job that needs to be done and somebody is happy doing it, I think it's better for the job. I think it's better for people around it. And it's a really, I guess that's a really silly way to say it. But if you are in a creative job and you don't like it, leave. Not only should you be more happy, but somebody else would want your job. You know what I mean? So anyway, I'm not sure. I kind of have a good idea of what I'm going to talk about, and I'm pretty sure that we're going to record it. So we'll have that up online too, so you guys can make fun of the way I walk around on stage and talk too much. But that will be this Friday, and I'm excited. Except for it's early. I think it's 9 in the morning. That's usually when I wake up. So I gotta get my coffee on, go there and talk about stuff. And anyway, so yeah, check out the HDRI stuff in the store. We got I've been doing a ton more renders in HDR. Using HDR, and if you would ask me, you know, a year ago, what my most used kind of tool that I built is, it would have been LightKit Pro. You know, move the lights around, get exactly where I want it. And now I use the HDR Studio Pack so much more because of the easy way I could kind of change between stuff and kind of get really drastically different looks. So look for some more HDRI tutorials on the blog soon. I'm going to have that stuff going on. But anyway, I wanted to talk to you guys about this idea, and then we're going to get to some questions later from the chat room, but I wanted to talk to you guys about this idea, and I meant to look up what movie this is from, but somebody linked to this a while ago, and the quote, it's Alec Baldwin in this cheesy kind of 90s adventure film, and I'm sure somebody in the chat room might know what the heck I'm talking about, but the quote from the film was, "What one man can do, another can do." And I think they're trying to kill a bear or something like that. And it's so short and simple, and it's just these few words that mean a lot to me. And the way that I look for help, the way that I look for inspiration, the way that I look for other people that have done it before me, and the way that one person that has done it before me can prove that it is possible. And this is where this starts to get really self-helpy kind of sounding. It is very, for me, very concrete to look at somebody and to look at somebody as a guidepost that allows your path to come true through seeing another person. That made no sense. Let me start from the beginning and try to re-explain this. But what one man can do, another can do, to me means that sometimes I don't know what's possible. In other words, I didn't know that you could do creative work and actually make a living out of it until I saw people like MK12 that were just a group of, you know, talented dudes in a room making stuff that they like to make and making a living out of it. And I didn't know that was possible. I thought you had to go get a job at a big agency. You know, I thought you had to, you know, be a freelancer and take whatever job came to you. And it didn't dawn on me until I saw somebody like MK12 or Digital Kitchen or all these, you know, studios that I've grown up liking, that I realized that you can just start a place and make the kind of stuff that you want to make and make a living out of it. Similarly, when I was playing around and, you know, playing around a little bit with iStock Photo and figuring out all that stuff, you guys have heard that story, I'm sure. But when I was coming up and playing around with the idea of making stuff that I wanted to make and putting it up on the internet and seeing if other people wanted to use it or play with it or whatever, or buy it, it was just then when guys like Jim Kudal, 37 Signals, Jason Fried, and David there, and also Threadless, all started talking about, and they're all from Chicago, actually. They're all like, you'd see them out my window here. They're all kind of in the neighborhood now. But they started talking about the idea that they would do less and less client work, and they would start to make stuff for themselves and then create a business out of that, right? And in fact, somebody asked me, Prince Mo from the chat room asked me right before we started here, he said, do you miss doing client work? Somebody asked how much client work I do. And the answer that is none. Other than that pinball machine I helped helped with, and I couldn't say no to that, of course, I haven't done client work. And the reason is not that I dislike client work. I just like this stuff more. Some people love the restrictions of clients. Some people love the idea that it's something new every day and somebody, you know, you get to research all this new stuff and play around with it. But for me, the idea of making my own stuff or looking and building my own tutorials and products and playing around with Cinema 4D for most of the day and going in directions that I want to go in and not necessarily directions that my clients want to go in, that was very interesting to me. And it was not known to me that that was a thing until other people started talking about it. And maybe that's me being, you know, I don't research enough or I'm kind of like shallow about it or whatever it is. But once I saw other people do what I didn't know was possible that I wanted to do, it instantly opened up in my head that this is also a possibility for me. I don't have to look at all these clients as a negative thing if that's how I'm thinking. I can actually think about this in a totally different way. I'm not sure if that makes sense. Maybe I'm, you know, maybe half the reason I go yell about all this stuff too is to make it more clear in my head. I tend to do that too much, and at the risk of not making any damn sense, I'm just kind of yelling what's going in my head here. But that idea of, okay, so back to Prince's question on if I miss client work. For the most part, I don't. For the most part, the best parts about client work were the first, you know, like 3/4 of client work, which was coming up with ideas, working around other people that were coming up with great ideas and storyboards, and then emulating that look and developing a look and looking at a style and thinking about solving their problems and looking at the problems they had in the past and trying to solve them for the future for them. And the absolute worst part of client work for me was that last, what I would say, quarter of the work, where all that work you did at the beginning starts to fall apart. In the worst case scenario with some clients, all that stuff starts to fall apart at the end when they want, you know, very specific changes. And you know what? They deserve those changes. It's not up to me to say you have to do what we say. They're paying and they deserve all the changes they want. In fact, I've been on the other side of that. I'm actually on the other side of that equation right now, where I've hired somebody to do some work for me, and now I'm the one being a jerk at the last quarter of end of the project, telling them to maybe change this little thing here and there. So I get it. I get that. But for me, that last quarter wasn't worth the first part, because sometimes the last quarter would remove all the work that you spent at the beginning. In other words, you thought about all these great ways to solve their problem. You thought about all the perfect colors. You thought about all the right things. And at the last minute, they sweep in and they say, do it like this, basically. And it's you know, for me, it's demoralizing in a lot of ways in the way that I work. And for the most part, I suck it up and do what they want. But in a perfect world, that last bit of it wouldn't exist. And when I started thinking about other ways to use my skills and the stuff that I was into, and all this 3D and photography and animation and stuff to make a living, I thought about, can I do without that last quarter? In other words, can you have clients without the last bit? Maybe you could write a contract to do that, to get rid of it. But for me, the answer was no. I'll be my client. I'll come up with stupid problems. I'll solve them. And then the last quarter of it, I'll still work and do that last bit of work. But now I'm the client. I'm the one that's you know, messing with all the little details and pixels and making the curves just right. And when it looks right to me, then it's done. It's not another round of going to a client and them having to put their touch on it, which, again, they have all the right in the world to do. But for me, it was a lot more fun to be my own client, if that makes sense. And so to take it back to that idea of what one man can do, another can do, seeing you know, somebody like Jim Kudal say exactly that they had clients, they were a shop, they did work, they were successful, but they wanted to try their own projects for a few different reasons. For the most part, they didn't seem to have too many problems with clients. But really what they wanted was full creative control over what they were making and to have the benefits of all that creative control and all the income from all that creative control, right? So once I saw somebody else start talking about it in those terms, I realized that that was a thing. That was a possibility. And it totally changed my mind on how I think about all this stuff. So I don't know. It seems like a silly thing to say, what one man can do, another can do. But for me, as soon as it's possible for one person, to me, it's possible. It's just a person. I don't know. That's not a fully thought out thing, but it's something new in my head, that seems to make sense to me when I look at it. In other words, if you are, you know, I don't know, dude, climbing Mount Everest is about the most self-helpy example I've ever come up with in my life. So I'm not going to talk about that. But let's say, you know, I wanted to ride my bike all winter this year. And so far, it's worked out okay. And one of the reasons I decided to do that wasn't because I was going to be the absolute first person to ride his bike through winter. A ton of people do it. I see them all the time. They're on their bike. They put all the scarves on and they ride. And I said, I want to do that. And one of the reasons that allowed me to make that decision was the idea that I know this is other people do it. You know, I'm a okay, healthy person, you know, and I could ride my bike in the summer. What's stopping me from riding in the winter? These people do it. Okay, I'm going to do it. And for me, there's a little bit of calming that thing in your head that says that you can't do it if somebody else does it. Somebody else leaves their job and goes freelance, and that's what you want to do, and your friend did it, and you guys are of equal kind of skill level and connections and all that stuff, why couldn't you do it? So I don't know. I'll think about that stuff more, but it's something that's been on my mind recently of how I think I specifically make decisions, but I think a lot of people make decisions based on not just what they've learned, but based on what others similar to them have done and can prove that it's done. But knowing it's possible is huge to me. You know, I don't know. Well, like most things, there is absolutely no end to that sentence. So I'll just, I'll digress, as somebody said, I should say. But I have another question here from the chat room. And let's see here. Destiny GFX asked a question. Do you have any advice on how to get your foot in the door for your, quote, dream job, quote? Yeah, I've talked a little bit about this before. There, one of the best ways you can go meet people in your dream job, quote, is to very early on, especially if you're in school, especially if you're just starting, especially, unfortunately, this is not an instant thing. This is a slow thing. Like most good relationships, it's a slow, gradual path. It's not this instant, hey, get me a job thing, right? But one of the things you could do is say, hey, I'm Destiny, in this case, or whatever your name is, and say, hey, I'm interested in what you guys do. Do you mind if I come by and ask you guys a few questions about how you guys do your work? I work at so-and-so company, or I go to so-and-so school, and I would love to come see what you guys do and just ask a couple questions. Is that okay? Can we schedule a time? And they say, sure. You come in, and you ask questions about them. You don't talk about your work. If they ask you about your work, what do you do? Well, I do this. I do animation for this place. I really love your work. I've always wondered how you guys schedule this stuff. You know, the way we do it at our place is like this, and you know, the way that you guys do it is this. And then just have a relationship. Now you know the person at the door. Now you've maybe met one of the creative directors or whoever sat down and said hi, and you say, hey, when I have any other questions, do you mind if I just give you a quick phone call, or if I get stuck with something? You know, I'm trying to be the best, let's say, animator I want to be, and you guys are the best in town, and I just love you guys. Do you mind if I ask a quick question every once in a while? And they probably say, yeah, sure. You know, don't bug them. Don't send them 100 emails. Now you have a connection. Now you have a contact. And here's the best part. When they go to fill that next job, you know, you can't walk in and say, hey, hire me. Look at how great I am. That's just not how it is. They might not be hiring. They probably aren't hiring. But the idea is that when they are hiring, if you fit what they're looking for, you are now on their mind, or you are now at least in their, in their Rolodex. You know what I mean? Like it's a real relationship you guys have, and it's not like, okay, wonder who we're gonna hire. Let's go find some person we don't know to go hire, right? So I would, and if you're not around them, you know, if they're across the country, maybe you make a quick phone call or a screencast or something, or a screen share or something like that, and just introduce yourself, say hi, say thanks, and say bye, and say, hey, if you guys ever need help with anything, I'd always love to see how you guys work. You know, let me know. Offer help. And don't be buggy about it and all that stuff, but say, hey, I like you guys, and just let them know. And I think that's one of the absolute best ways to kind of, you know, quote, get your foot in the door, that kind of stuff. Let's see here. The next question I wrote down from the chat room, and this is from Joey D. Booth. Joey D. Booth. He says, I'm a big sports fan. Do you think focusing on sports graphics can be a full-time / good career? Also, don't you think there should be a theme to sports graphics other than Chrome? So that's kind of two questions, but I'll start with the first one. And that's, do you think it's a good career? And it's a good full-time career. This is awesome. This is a great question because I have experience in this one. I'm not just pulling answers out of my ass like I usually am. I did some motion graphics for the Bulls and the Blackhawks and the White Sox back when I was in college. I did help with a guy that's also in this neighborhood, actually, Tom, and he hired me and my roommate to help out. So, you know, starting off, we did a lot of rotoscoping of players and all that stuff. And slowly we started, you know, he started giving us more and more kind of more interesting things to do. Basically, he trusted us more to make animations and to come up with ideas and concepts. And while I didn't stay in the sports motion graphics stuff, my roommate did. And in fact, he still works at the stadium at where the Bulls and the United Center, that's what they call it. He still works at the United Center helping with all the Jumbotron graphics, and is kind of like an art director up there. So he's actually made a career. I'm probably screwing up the official titles and all that stuff, so sorry, buddy. But he, as far as I know, it's a career. Now, I don't think it's a full-time career, but I think from what I've heard, he could have made it a full-time career. And I know a lot of people through him that have made it a full-time career. So I think if you're interested in sports graphics, man, go for it. And should visit his site, and that is Graphics Mafia. Let me type this here. Graphics Mafia, I think it's .com. Just do a search for Graphics Mafia on Google. And he actually collects some of the best sports graphics and does interviews and kind of talks about this stuff. It's basically a site that is dedicated to sports motion graphics. So if you're interested in it, make sure you check out that site. And he runs it. So as far as a full-time job, yeah, I think it's totally possible. There's a lot of people that work full-time in sports graphics. The second one, do you think it's a... there's kind of a three-part question. So is it a good job? A lot of people would say that sports graphics, for some people, is a stepping stone. And I think my buddy would agree with this. For some people, it's a stepping stone to another career. In other words, it's a young person's game. It's a new person's game. And then once they get experience and they want to go work at that studio or whatever, they go do that. But I think there's a growing trend of people that actually want to stay there and make this their full-time thing. They're really into sports. They like the graphics. They want to revolutionize it. Like you said, Joey, you want to make it so it's not all a bunch of chrome and like robots dancing around. You want to like add your style to it or try something else, you know? So I think there's totally a market in that. And you know what? That totally plays into this idea of doing what you want to do with your talents and not necessarily relying on like the three things that some list on the internet might say you want to do with these skills. So, you know, taking animation and motion graphics and logos and all this stuff and applying it to sports graphics seems like this like really thin little sliver that nobody really talks about too much. But I say go for it, man. I mean, go meet those people. Do the same thing. Go walk in, try to get a meeting and say, hey, I like the graphics. I like what you did at that game where you did this thing. And I'm really interested in this process. How do you make the stuff so fast? You know, be interested in what you're doing and go meet the other people that are interested in what they're doing and start a relationship with that and see where it goes, man. I wish you the luck, man, because sports graphics is cool. I had a great time making that stuff. You could still, I think there's still a bit of it on my portfolio. I'm not sure if it's still there. It was a long time ago. Holy crap. But go for it. Let me know how that goes too, man. Sounds awesome. So let me check the chat room here. Again, I think it'll be a short one today. I just want to come say hi to you guys. I feel like I need to do this every week and I don't, and I'm a big jerk. I'm a big jerk every time I don't. So, let me check here. Blah, 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 blah. How do you manage and focus? Cool. So Gemma Mills says, when you have several projects at once, iPhone apps, blog, C4D, work, how do you manage them all and focus? And I think the question kind of jumped there at the end. So hopefully I said it right. Thank you for the question. How do you focus? For me, it's not about trying to do a bunch of things at once. And I talked a little bit about this right before I hit record, just live, you know, we have the chat room up in a little bit. And people were talking about the podcast Back to Work and about the book they were talking about for a few weeks there called Getting Things Done. And I've basically adopted, I've done the wrong thing. You know, the right thing to do is to adopt Getting Things Done directly and do it the right way. But unfortunately, I'm not quite there yet. I wish I was. I wish I was better at it, basically. But what I do, my kind of role right now is to absolutely do the first part of getting things done. And if you're not familiar with it, it's a great book. Please read it. Also check out the Back to Work series that they had at least three or four episodes of nothing but Back to Work. And the first thing they do, and the first thing he recommends doing, is getting it all out of your head. So if you have 5, 10, 18 projects going on, the worst place to keep it, the worst place to juggle it is in your head. The best place to juggle it is on paper. And write it all down and look at what you have to do to complete the project, and then write down all the first next steps you have to do to complete those projects. And then you're not worrying about the job. Then you're not worrying about the final piece. You're only worried about that next thing that you need to do to finish a project. So for me, I have a ski trip coming up, and that is a project in my system. We also have products here and tutorial ideas, and we have a big NAB thing this year. All these things are projects in my OmniFocus, and what I have to do and what I should be better at is writing down exactly what my next steps are, so that when I go sit down and work, all I have to do is look at my stuff to do and work. One of the key kind of principles of getting things done, and something that is something I have adopted. Again, I have a lot to learn about this, specifically the reviews and all that stuff. I'm not great at doing, but one of the things I've really tried to do with getting things done is understand that when you sit down to work, you should not be thinking about stuff. You should not be making decisions necessarily when you sit down to work. Now, of course, with design, with 3D, you're always going to say, like, you know, picking different colors and pick all this stuff. Of course, there's decisions to be made, but you shouldn't be deciding what to do when you sit down. You should have a list in front of you and do it. In other words, if I have a phone call to make, I look at my phone calls, and I have it tagged that I also have three other phone calls to make. So now I'm on my phone. I go in the other room. I dial four numbers. I get the answers I need, and I'm done. I'm now done with four phone calls. So let me pick one example, just so I'm not jumping around with different projects and metaphors here. But so I have this ski trip coming up, and a ski trip, you know, is no different than any other project. There are things I have to do in order to get in my car at the end of February and to start driving out toward the mountains and, you know, hang out with my friends. So I have a lot of things to do. I have to schedule the exact day I'm leaving. I have to call my friends that live out there and let them know that, and ask them if I could crash on their couch. I have to get a map together for the route that I'm taking and where I can stop at what nights. I have to tune my skis up. They're beat up from last year. I have to take them into the shop. I have to then get them from the shop and bring them back. I have to make sure I have all my clothing on, or make sure I'll probably have clothing on, but I have to make sure I have all my clothing ready. I have to make sure everything's packed. I have to wash the car. I have to get an oil change for the car before I go drive 6,000 miles. You can see there's a lot of little steps that I have to do before I could go take this trip. And what I did was I open up OmniFocus and I type all of them out. Everything that's in my head is now out. It's on paper, and it is now a list of things I could do. So now when I am running an errand, I can go look at my list and say, hey, while you're out, Nick, maybe you should pack your skis in your car, go by the ski shop and drop them off and get a tune-up. You have to do it anyway. Why not do it now and not wait till the last minute like you always do, you freaking idiot? So having that, and you know what? I'll stop talking about it, because Merlin does a way better job of it. And I'm not that great at it right now either. But that is that one thing, that one decision of, other than thinking about what to do next, just sitting down and having a list of things to do next absolutely changed the way I do things during the day. And the only other thing I'll add is I use my calendar for all the things that I have to actually do that day. So if I know tomorrow, oh, S-word, I got to call this guy and update him on this project. Or, oh, I should do a podcast tomorrow, like this podcast I wrote yesterday. Last night I go, I need to do a podcast. Write it down, put it in the calendar, and now we're here because it's in the calendar. So I will try to talk about this more when I'm more wrapped around it, but For me, it's mostly getting things done, and it's mostly getting it the hell out of my head and on paper so that my mind isn't turning about what to do next. It's just doing what has to be done, if that makes sense. But very highly recommend the back to work, get GTD, what other notes, and just try, and yeah, I got that. Cool. Well, all right, let's end it there, guys. You know, I have absolutely no intro or outro for this podcast. So many of the podcasts I have, what do they have? These little intros that be like, hey, welcome to Grayscale World Podcast, where we make learning fun. Blah, 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 blah. Music fades out and then blah, blah. I also have no exit. I have no out. I have no see you next time. Happy rendering. Enjoy the world around you. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's my end. So we'll do this. Instead of saying thanks, I'll say thanks now. Thanks for always listening. Instead of saying I'll see you next time, I'll say it now. I'll see you guys next time on another Grayscale Gorilla podcast. And instead, I'll leave you with a brand new exit that will always be the outro from now on. And it goes like this. I come from a long line of Studebaker sandwiches. Goodbye, everybody.